fascinating medrash about Geula. I apologize if the sound quality is a little bit muffled. I'm driving in a car the next couple of weeks. I'm going to try to keep the shiurim consistent, but I'll be traveling a bit, so they might be recorded in some very non-conventional locations. If the pasuk in Hosea comments on Yaakov, I don't have obviously a sefer in front of me, but the general language of the pasuk is Vayivrach Yaakov Ste Aram. Yaakov flees to the fields of Aram. Something Vayisa Isha Vayavod Yisrael Biisha Viisha Shamar. It's a pasuk in Hosea, in Yud Gimel, and the pasuk has a double language about Yaakov's wives, and it indicates or implies that there are two wives. Right? One is the first wife. He travels or he flees to Ste Aram, Vayavod Yisrael Biisha, and Yaakov Yisrael works on behalf of his wife in order to secure his wife from his father-in-law Lavan, and then Uvisha Shamar. Then he spends another 7 years Shamar, waiting and hoping that that second wife, which ultimately is his chosen wife Rachel, will become his.
ועוד קילומטר וחצי, נס מולה אל 3855, ואז בכיכר המשך ישר.
So let's turn it off here, then I'll be able to continue recording. So, in the Medrash, I think it's Rabbi Yochanan, says that Yaakov is a example or a precedent for the Jewish people, and so much of Yaakov's life is reflective of the Jewish people. That's why, of course, we get our name from him. We aren't called Avraham, though we are the descendants of Avraham. We aren't called Yitzchak, though we're the descendants of Yitzchak. We're called Yisrael. Yaakov has a national experience, whereas Avraham and Yitzchak only have family or clans. So what aspect of this double marriage is prescient or foreshadows the Jewish people? So many parts of Yaakov's life that foreshadow, especially at the latter and Beit El, and in his encounter with Esav in particular, these two nighttime encounters, and then of course the major confrontation with Esav, Yaakov and Esav, the Jewish people in Western civilization. But what possibly is conveyed by his having two wives and working for two wives seems to be something more personal rather than more of a historically resident or starkly reflected. So the matter says that the aspect of Jewish history that's captured by Yaakov's two wives is the fact that he works, and that's what's stressed in the pasuk by Ya'avod Isha, that he works. And then even though there's a turning point in which you'd think that maybe the work is concluded because he's getting married, he continues to work. Now, the reason he continues to work is because he's working toward a second marriage, but in this matter, that's not important. The terminus of that second stint of working is not important. What is important is the structure and the sequence, that he works, he's mishtabed, then he's nigal, then he's redeemed, namely he's married, so it's a form of a redemption, and you would think that redemption would lead to finality and clearance and liberation. But then, lo and behold, he continues to work. And he's still indebted, and he's still struggling. And the struggle for this Yaakov is constantly struggling, holding on to heels. That continues. There's no letdown. There's no climax and subsequent tranquility or peace that sets in. And the marriage continues. That's similar to the Jewish people, that they were mishtabed, and then their goel is nolad, nolad mehem goel. Again, more or less the words of the Medrash, nolad mehem goel. And then even after misha nolad goel, atem mishtabdim. They're continued to be suppressed or to be working and laboring and struggling with the process. Now, this may be referring to Mitzrayim, which is the next and really the first national gula. So it's the first time that Yaakov's template becomes a reality, and Moshe's birth, even though it heralds the redemption, it doesn't initiate any lightening of their load or any resolution of this terrible Egyptian exile. If anything, it intensifies and it exacerbates, and it's highlighted by the great fear that sets in after 3 months and the extreme drastic measures to actually put a little baby in the Nile River. So in the literal sense, it may be referring that literally when the Goel, when the Redeemer Moshe was born, you would have thought the process of redemption would start cycling at the expense of the, or in place of the suffering and the tyranny, and it didn't. Obviously, if it's Yaakov, it's not just setting a template or model for a one-time experience or a one-time recurrence. It's providing a template which repeats itself, which cycles repeatedly. And therefore, its connotation is not just about the birth of Moshe, but about the birth, quote-unquote, the metaphoric birth of potential and redemptive potential. That even after the redemptive potential is born and commences, the Shibud continues. Whether that's the actual birth of a leader like Moshe or the birth of redemptive experience. And, of course, this conveys two messages. One message is that just because redemption has begun doesn't mean that everything neatly packages itself into a final resolution and all of our suffering and struggle concludes. And the flip side, it's really one statement, but an important statement to remember reciprocally, is just because Gula has begun doesn't mean the struggle ends. And just because the struggle endures doesn't mean that Gula hasn't begun. And there are two different messages there. A lot of people falsely believe, though, if this is Reishis Michas Gula Seinu, then how could there be? How could there be? How could there be? A lot of people who believe in Gula get so frustrated by the inability to reach that clean and unaffected and non-confrontational state. I remember in the mid-90s, during the very, very difficult days of Oslo, and it was apocalyptic to retreat from land, which we thought and continue to think is ours, and we thought we were on an upward and continuous arc of settling our land and achieving sovereignty. Again, it's 20 years later or 25 years later. I don't think contemporary people who didn't live through that experience can begin to absorb how shocking and painful and almost unbelievable it was. And many people started to question whether we should recite Reishis Michas Gula Seinu, and independent of the formulation and what you do say or don't say in shul, many people lost their patience and their belief in Gula. And Moshe Rabbeinu's birth highlights, and of course Yaakov's experience, is just because you're working towards a certain resolution and that resolution begins doesn't mean that it clears up and resolves itself completely and totally. And the flip side is also true, that just because the Shibud continues isn't the sign that a lot of people aren't willing to accept even the premonition or the premise, excuse me, of Geula. Because where's the Beis HaMikdash, and where is Mashiach, and where is the Melech, and where is Ruach HaKodesh, and where is Nevuah? And so many aspects of Geula haven't yet blossomed, and so many aspects of Shibud, not necessarily physical Shibud, although physical Shibud as well, anti-Semitism, but so many aspects of spiritual Shibud that we lost, having abdicated the Beis HaMikdash, haven't been restored. So it's a very, and I use this word judiciously, a very sobering medrash and a very grounding medrash. And whenever I use those words regarding redemption and Geula, I think of my two Rebbes, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and Rav Amital, because if you ask me, obviously they were very different. Rav Amital was deeply influenced by Rav Kook. I don't remember, I probably could count on a few fingers, the amount of times that I heard, I don't know, but that I heard Rav Lichtenstein quote Rav Kook. Their arcs were very different. Rav Amital fought in the Independence War, was a major figure in all the wars, the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War. Rav Aaron obviously came in 71 and was less involved in the actual military experience in the way that Rav Amital was. But if there was one commonality between them, is that they each in their own way believed that the restoration of our land and our peoplehood and our people's residence in Israel was a divine event, was a significant historical event. I think Rav Amital would use the word redemptive. I think Rav Lichtenstein would use the word redemptive. I certainly feel comfortable using the word redemptive. But they didn't let the train go go off the rails. Once it's redemption, the extreme versions is where you can just suspend halacha, suspend reason, suspend ration, generate unrealistic expectations. Because when you generate unrealistic expectations and they're dashed, the entire system can collapse rather than sober, responsible expectations. They're very tethered to the past, pre-redemptive experience. It didn't let them become giddy to the point of overstepping our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and banking on Hashem just to redeem us at all costs, because after all, we're living through Geula. So this is a medrash that I never heard them quote, but when I read the medrash, truth is I didn't really think about this association with my Rebbonim until I read the medrash and started thinking about it, but something innately reminded me of so many of the messages I received from them, that even after that turning point, which for Yaakov is marriage, but which for us is the beginning of Geula, the return to our land, even afterwards the Sheba continues, the Yaakov continues to work. Again, in a more moral and existential level, it's a symbol and a sign of Yaakov's persistence and tenacity and stick-to-itiveness. If we take it out of the historical metaphor, very often in life we're working to a certain goal, we're working for a certain objective, we're laboring, we're investing. And how do you handle yourself when you achieve that milestone? I'll never forget, something's lodged very deeply within me. I once read a study of Olympic medalists who spend dozens of years preparing for that moment. And if they fail, you can imagine how devastating it is. But what happens if you succeed? You would think it's just a walk in the park afterwards, the triumph, the success, the vindication. But when your life has been so focused on a particular goal, and then that goal comes, sometimes it goes because you don't achieve it, or sometimes you achieve your goal, how do you return with your lunchbox the next day to the same construction site and keep plugging away when you feel like you've reached a milestone? And certainly when you suffer the frustration of the milestone being stripped from you or taken from you. And it's a sign of Yaakov's persistence and his willpower and his discipline. And he's able to work, and the pasuk is very palindromic. It sounds very symmetrical. Od shavu amalei shavu azos, od shavas shanim. Sounds like he's working. Chazal picked this up, that he works with the same intensity, the same focus, the same work ethic. So even if you take it out of the historical context, it's a very, very powerful medrash. But certainly in the historical framework, it reminds us not to expect unrealistic redemptive scenarios, to sense and to acknowledge the redemptive process, even though the Shibud may continue. And in some cases, unrelated to this management, as Chazal pointed out, the Shibud may get worse. It's altogether possible some of the struggles may themselves intensify and magnify as we're back in Eretz Yisrael. So it's not something that should create simplistic thought.